Okay, welcome to episode 43 of the Never Iron Anything podcast. We've got something slightly different this week. We've had a last-minute change. Some rock music-related adventures have interfered with this episode. I might put it that way. But it's been... we've got a rain check. It's coming back in October, so the little episode we had planned. So today, I called on an old pal, and I thought this was probably quite a good excuse to talk about his upcoming Kickstarter. The pal is Johnny Cannon. The book is The United Welcome to the Shit Show. Let's describe it as a postmodern deconstruction of what it means to be a superhero in the modern Scotland and beyond. Hello, Johnny.
How's it going? Sorry, I'm just writing down what you just said, because that's better than what I put in the back cover.
That's my Radio 4 intro. Do you like that? I worked on that in the hour we had to prepare for the show.
Yeah, well, there is that. Yeah, we have prepared something entirely different for tonight.
Let's name him. We're missing James. So James has gone off to do something with his band, which was unavoidable. But we're going again in. We're going to do our little subject that we had planned, which we've all been revising. We're going to go for that again in October. So I'm looking forward to that. But I thought it was a good chart. Like I said to you, why don't we talk about this? Because you're about to go to Kickstarter with it, aren't you? I think that's the plan.
So October for Kickstarter. I quite like the idea of launching on Halloween, but it's pretty much done. I just need to give it a final read through. Gavin Boyle, who I worked with on, he did the design for Transylvanian Nights.
Oh, okay.
And
right.
He did Escape from Cope Bridge and Portal Comics Anthology, which the United was in as well.
Sitting on the shelf in my office, that is that book? Yeah, in fact, Falpy picked it up the other day when we were sitting in there. Yeah.
Good stuff, Portal.
Yeah, it's there.
I said about four comics. Yeah. I still think that's one of the my favourite things I've done, and I think it's I maybe say that because I worked on it with someone else, and I always wanted the United to be in an anthology comic anyway.
Right, let's get to your artistic doubts that I've never thought are particularly well founded in a minute. But to start off with, Mr. J, is why don't we just give us, for those who haven't read it, there's a few people out there maybe haven't heard of it, because I know we've talked about it on the Awesome Comics podcast. What is it about? Give us a little bit of a summary of what you've done. So it's a collection of previously released stories plus a very, very much longer section, which is new. Is that right?
Yes. So The United came out in 5 issues, and then... Because I'm an absolute idiot, or because it was too clever for my own good, I decided to take... I like the idea, you know, the old Hatch, Match and Dispatch titles, where you'd have something like Strontium Dog that would appear in Star-Lord, and then it would run in 2000 AD in Star-Lord, then just 2000 AD.
Yeah, and they'd keep Strontium Dog. Yeah, yeah. So the old classic British thing, yeah.
Yeah, or Captain Britain would appear in Captain Britain, then move into Marvel Superheroes and Mighty World of Marvel, then the Daredevils in Captain Britain. Yep. That's why I wanted to do it that way, which is just stupid. Someone's actually buying in a shop. If you're at a con, it's fine because you can explain it. But that's just not the way comics are really done anymore.
Yeah.
And certainly not UK comics. So it's got issues 1 to 5 of The United.
So what is The United? That's what I'm aiming at, really. So what is it? What's the story about, you know?
So it's the story of a super team that goes horribly wrong, and they're pulled together by the UK government, and they don't necessarily pull together like all the best superheroes, like I suppose the Justice League of America, like that Grant Morrison kind of seven archetypes kind of thing that they had there, the seven ones. It's more like, I suppose, just the most popular characters to pull together. So there's Big Cat, who's a underwear model, who was based in part on David Beckham.
And,
there's a Mighty Scotsman, who's this kind of... he never actually joins the United. He doesn't want to be part of it. He says he'll help out, but he doesn't want to be part of it because he doesn't want to be used as a political symbol, because this is all set against the backdrop to the Scottish independence referendum, because that's when I started.
Yeah. For the American audience who don't understand this, Scotland tried to leave us a few years ago. There was a big once in a lifetime, let's not call it that because it might be another one, vote. I have got half my family Scottish, as Johnny knows, and then it was very slim pickings, but eventually they decided through a vote to stay, which involved me then driving to Scotland and saying to all my relatives, what was all that about then? A lot. But when you were making this comic, it was like, it's still talked about. It's still every day you hear about it in some kind of news media, don't you? It was a big subject at the time.
Yeah. So it's happened twice in my lifetime. It happened in the 70s as well.
I didn't realize that. Okay. Right.
Hold on. I'd have to. God, that's really bad. I used to teach this stuff. And it's almost certainly going to happen again in the not too distant future, because of various
different
things.
Working that way, isn't it? Yeah, looking that way. Yeah.
So, and then there's other characters as well, like Britannia, Boudicca, Battalion, and they've all got kind of Union Jack themed costumes, and Eddie Speed as well, who's almost got like a cross between the Flash and Johnny Thunder and Captain Britain's costume. It's a kind of lightning bolt Union Jack kind of thing, which was a nightmare to draw. It's only really drawn this bit. I was like, oh yeah, I can actually draw that costume pretty well now. It looks much better in colour. But he was based in Billy Whiz.
So Billy Whiz, I don't know, is one sort of comedy comics. Was it Whizzer and Chips? I can't remember now which Billy Whiz.
He was in the Beano as well, I think.
The Beano? Okay, maybe the Beano, I'm not sure. But it's also slang for amphetamines in England.
Yes, which is why he's called Eddie Speed, because there it just is a speed. And that's why he's got that wee hairstyle, because that's based... If you actually look at the character, he's like a more illustrative drawn version of Billy Whiz. Like, he's got the shaved...
I never realised that. Okay, right.
Yeah, so that's what he's based on. I'm trying to think what other characters in there as well. Yeah, and then there's like a big supporting cast, like the original Battalion, Freemason.
We're going to get onto that. There's a folklore element to what you're doing as well. I think we'll talk about that in a bit. But when you talk about influences, Mighty Scotsman draws quite heavily on the second costume for Captain Britain, isn't it? The Alan Davis. Kind of style.
Shamelessly so.
I wouldn't say that. I thought it was a homage because you've gone from having a British flag to the blue and white of the Scottish flag, St Andrew's Cross, you know, so.
Yeah, it's quite funny because, like, so there's pin-ups in the collection as well. There's five and when people have got in touch with me and it's like, oh, which characters you like, that's always the one that people say they really like. And I think it goes back to that thing about you should always have a strong silhouette.
Yes.
I really do like that character, but I think maybe because he's the openly Scottish character in the team.
Yeah, I mean, even without the blue and white costume, he's a Scotsman, isn't he? He's got that about him. He's got the, you know, he's a large frame as if he's tossing a caber. That's not rude, American listeners. He's got, he's even wearing a kilt. You know, there's just something... I don't know.
He's got
genetically Scottish about him, isn't there? You know,
really peely wally, big ginger beard. I mean, he sounds Scottish as well. I mean, it's quite funny. I get asked to do I can't remember what it's called. Michael Dempster does it. He asked me if I would put one of my strips in Scots language comic, and it was going to go in the Scottish library. I was like, yeah, that sounds really cool, man.
All right.
But he's like, yeah, because I love your Scots comics. And I was like, what? I didn't actually realise that that's been writing Scots dialogue, really. And I was like, I didn't really think of it as that, because I was writing The Mighty Scotsman the way I talk, except not swearing. I like that character. But probably my favourite character at the start, going into it, was Big Cat, just because he's such a fud. Which for American listeners is a... I was going to say as a fanny, but...
Just a fanny pack. He's a character who... he appears on Jonathan Ross, doesn't he, at the start? Is that on the Jonathan Ross talk show? Is that right? Can't remember.
Yes, that's right.
Yeah.
So that's where another influence came from, I suppose, in writing, with the very first... So it's meant to be done in, like, 7 pages, and that was meant to mirror the way Captain Britain used to be published, at, like, once a month in 7-page instalments, or Judge Dredd in 5 or 6-page instalments. And it was mirrored in that tradition of British anthologies, and that's why it was in black and white. As well, and I'd always had the plan of approaching other folk to say, do you want to do an anthology, because that's what I really wanted to do, because at that time I felt that my stuff just wasn't strong, and I never thought anyone was going to buy this, but maybe I could sneak it with a small press stuff. That's before I knew the quality of a lot of small press which is really good. It's a broad,
apparently.
It goes from really good to yeah. you know, stuff that folk will do themselves and print off, which is brilliant, because I think that punk aesthetic's, you know, really, really strong in British comics, even with 2000D, which is fucking
certainly
amazing.
Improved, isn't it, over the last 10 years. The last 10 years I've seen small press stuff is, yeah, in the most part, has got better. Now, that's the question. Let's go to that then, because dating it as having Jonathan, because Jonathan Ross no longer has a quiz show or a talk show, does he? He's doing, you know, rubbish now. But
what is he doing?
He's doing that Mask Singer thing.
What's that?
I wish I didn't know. So it's, you're almost going back to the well a bit, are you? I know this has taken you a while to draw, because it was, what did it end up being, 70 odd pages, didn't it? Extra. Did you feel a need to, because it came out in five and a further sort of six comics, didn't it? It came out in a five issue series. Why did you suddenly think, I need to finish that, or rather than moving on, because you do have fingers in other pies, you are doing other things like Transylvania Nights. Did you not feel you wanted to move on to another project? Why was it calling back to you, I suppose?
My wife asked me this a lot as well, actually. Why are you still doing that? James is constantly telling me, the thing I get asked about most from at cons is, when are you going to be doing Transylvania Nights and stuff? But the comic for me that's always sold most is The United.
Okay.
Like, it sold out its first print run. And I think that's partly because when I go to a con, James is usually there and he's better at selling comics. So he sells more Transylvania Nights than I do. People will go to him first and then come at me to get it to sign it. So you could have bought it from me. But so there's it was weird. I was drawing, I'd stopped doing it after Portal, and I drew Transylvania Nights, then I did Portal as a wee break from Transylvania Nights, because it was only going to be, I think it was only going to be 7 pages in there, and then Gav was meant to be doing more than he actually did.
Right.
And I ended up doing more pages than that, just because he had too much stuff going on. So
yeah,
I drew
we're going to get to your writing style in a minute, I have to say, because... you've got something of a like the way you do it. I just wondered, why did you feel that there was things unanswered, or did you feel that there was plot lines that you just had to, is it a sort of comic collector thing where it's you just had to finish it, you know?
I've never finished a comic. I've barely finished a sentence before, which has been very good. I've never really
a story. That's the funniest thing you've ever said to me. That's brilliant. And I feel your pain there, my friend. Yeah. It's weird, isn't it? Yeah. Yeah.
It's in a list of one though, Tony Lester. I know, it's infuriating for my wife. It was just it's like an itch you can't scratch. It's just, and even though, you know, I've had plenty of other ideas for our comics and stuff, and I love drawing space rats as well. I really love drawing space rats. That's great fun. And I love drawing Transylvania Nights. It's just United, it's like that first love. It's something I do. The actual comic itself, I do entirely me. I write, well, I don't write it. Well, I kind of write it. I suppose I do write it. I write it, I draw it, you know, ink it, letter it, edit it.
So are you, maybe. Have you got that out of your system? Are you done with it now? Is that it? Or it's not completely final, is it? The story, with no spoilers, but I think you could go back to it, couldn't you?
There's an entire
universe.
World. That's the thing. It's not even touched in. It's one. I'm not going to say it's one country, because some people might be offended by that. It's the whole nation.
Yeah.
It doesn't. It goes to, in flashbacks, to Northern Ireland. This story is kind of set over a long period of time.
Yeah.
And the way that structured it was is that it's a kind of fragmented narrative. And this story, I don't think it's giving away too many spoilers at this point, was the name of the United and the story itself. It's a team of a team that comes together. They're meant to be this kind of super team, and it quickly falls apart. And it's actually based on the David Priest book, The Damned United. Bluff's time at Leeds United.
Yeah, there's a good movie of it as well, isn't there?
Yeah. So that's why it's and if you actually read it, it's in day 44, it all falls apart.
Oh, I never knew that. How long have I known you for? I didn't know that was the case. Oh, okay. Right.
Originally, when I was going to draw them, I was going to do them like almost in football strips. Like, so they're all going to have like the kind of same costume kind of thing, and that was going to be the British feel of it.
Right.
But the Mighty Scotsman would be the odd one out, and that's why at the start he says he's never going to join the team. mean, their costumes are all slightly tweaked over the process of drawing the comic, just because I got better at drawing and better at designing stuff. And just there's some stuff it's not too hard to draw, because you can draw in if you put your mind to it. It's too clunky, and the designs are a little bit ugly. And it's like that Toth thing, you know, you spend the first half of your career learning what to put in the on the page, and then the second half of your career learning what to take out.
Yeah, well, let's talk about that a bit, because we'll talk a bit about the art style, because you are, of everyone I know, you're the person I know most who studies art like a bastard in order to improve. So was that like a kind of a mission of yours when you thought, all right, I'm going to go back to the United, I'm going to study, and I know there's, for example, you mentioned Toth there, and I know we talk about Toth all the time, you and I, but did you go and like think, right, these artists, I'm going to study them, I'm working in black and white, I need to sort of tweak this, need to improve here. What was your approach?
The Toth thing came about really, I mean, I'd seen Toth before, but never really studied it until you and I did the episode with Russell Mark Olsen.
Yeah.
And that's when I was just like, kind of reading through that stuff, and I was just like, holy fuck, his storytelling's just, it's completely, I mean, he's, I think anyone that's ever read his stuff, like a chunk of his stuff.
Yeah.
If you particularly if you make comics, there is no fucking shadow of a doubt, man. I mean, in terms of US comics, he's on that Mount Rushmore. Yeah. He is absolutely up there with the likes of Jack Kirby. There's no two ways about it.
Yeah, if he did as much as Kirby, if he did as much as Ditko, he definitely would be there, wouldn't he? It's just he didn't have that sort of long run or that, you know, for me.
I think he's up there partly because of the DC and Marvel marketing machines.
Well, I think they're different fish. I think I think Kirby has got that cosmic, that imagination, but Toth is like super realistic, isn't it? Everything is cartooned from realism. So yeah, I was looking at that Black Canary stuff that went up for sale the other day, and I'm thinking, oh, that's so good.
Yeah,
Wally
Wood I would put up there as well. Wally Wood, Jesus, his line is absolutely stunning. Did you watch that Steranko thing I sent you there?
No, I haven't watched it yet. No, but I think I'd seen a bit of it before, which is why I giggled when you sent it through. But yeah.
He's just when he starts talking about Wally Wood, he's just, I mean, the guys. I mean, they're just unbelievable. I mean, they really are. It's incredible. Yeah. So
this is you. This is self-deprecating, Mr. Cannon. You always do this. So let's talk about your style. So did you actually actively work on stuff? Or was there anything in particular you thought, right, I need to improve on? Figure drawing or buildings or, you know, what sort of stuff, shadowing or, you know.
Women's arses.
Yeah, I stare at them a lot. Yeah, just for pure artistic reasons.
So when I started drawing the United, the thing I found hardest to draw was women. And I think that's because when I was growing up, I was always drawing like pictures of sort of male superheroes. And when I used to play a role-playing game with my mates, which was Heroes Unlimited.
Oh, I remember that, yeah. Yeah.
And TMNT, so I would always be playing male characters in that, and I would design the characters and stuff in it. And I'd always struggled drawing women because I probably didn't know the female form. I wasn't. Which tells you basically I was a bit of a I was a bit shy around women and stuff, so I never basically.
We're getting back to the story I told you before we started recording, where I said I'd accidentally accused a very famous Marvel artist of being a virgin. But yeah, we're getting there. Yeah.
Yeah, basically that is it. I was a virgin. and then when I eventually lost that, it was in a toilet and I was drunk, so there wasn't a chance to crack out my drawing utensils. Just,
hang on, let's keep that pose. Yeah.
Yeah.
So females, yeah. I mean, you manage to bridge that gap between having women who are, I suppose, bodybuilder-esque in a way, sort of powerfully built, to women who are the more sort of classically sort of sexy, long hair kind of characters, don't you? There's a little bit of both there, isn't there?
Yeah. So, my wife, I remember when she was looking through it, Boudicca is that kind of classic, you know, proportions of a female character in a superhero comic, you know, big. Yeah. But she was designed that way. She's designed as that kind of stereotype.
Yeah.
But it's the same with Big Cat. He's a stereotypical handsome guy.
He's the male cheesecake, I suppose. Yeah.
And Mighty Scotsman as well, who gets... I mean, the only characters in this who end up naked are male characters.
Right.
I mean, the Mighty Scotsman is, you know, ends up getting his clothes blown off quite a lot. I mean, an explosion is not with a hairdryer or anything like that. Yeah. So, aye, there's that, but certainly the physique thing was interesting because with men, I would look at the different builds of boxers or gymnasts or runners. So for Eddie Speed,
I know you're a big boxing fan, aren't you? So
yeah,
we talked about last time you showed me, and we had a big talk about that. It was in a Starbucks in Glasgow over a year ago, and you showed me a page, and I said, "That's a fucking good punch." I'm tired of. I watched some movie the other day with my missus called Ava, which is about a female hit woman, and she didn't look like she could blow out a candle, you know. And you got to show power in a punch, and I think you've managed to do that with a lot of your stuff. There, you got to be able to show it, and that's I genuinely think one of the best ways of doing that is to watch a punch in a boxing match, you know.
Oh yeah, yeah. So I mean the thing that I would do is if I was working out a fight, sometimes act it out,
right,
and just think what I would. I mean, I wasn't great, but you know what? I know how to fight.
Yeah.
So I would kind of work that out and think, right, I mean, it's basic things like, you know, if he's throwing a left in this panel, he should follow through with a right, you know. And one thing I would always try and do is you'll maybe notice, like, different characters, some, like Big Cat, always keeps his hands up.
Right, okay.
Because he actually knows how to fight.
Yeah.
And if you look at the fight he has with a character called Gentleman, who's basically just you don't actually learn his backstory. But he's just this incredibly violent guy that just basically shows up to randomly fight people.
I mean, there is a lot of...
I
was struck by the amount... I mean, and I'm a fan of violence. You know, I was struck that there is a lot of violence in the United, isn't there?
I didn't think there was until I think it was Alistair Black. He commented on it.
Oh, right, like, okay, yeah.
I read back through it and I was like... Because I was thinking, oh, this is just fine. Like, I'd let my kids read this. And then I was like... Someone gets a fucking hole punched in their head.
big shout to Alistair as well. We tried to get him on tonight. We couldn't make it, could he? Yeah, because I know he did the first preview review, didn't he, of your book?
Yeah, and he's asked him to write the foreword because...
Ah, cool.
And I didn't actually... It was only when he was writing the foreword, I didn't realise that he actually wrote to me a few years ago to ask me if the United was going to be in sale in Edinburgh.
Oh, really? And oh, nice.
Yeah. So he'd been in touch. I think he ever did maybe the first review in Daredevils and Warriors. And Gary did one as well in Comics Anonymous.
Yeah.
Gary Watson. And then Dan did one on Awesome Comics Podcast. And everyone said really nice things, which...
Oh, nice. Cool.
So
Alistair's like a super fan. Now you got a super fan there. That's pretty good.
Yeah. But apparently said I was really rude in my email back. You think about you saying about I've got this reputation at cons for being really brisk with people. I don't think I am,
I've never said that. No.
You've got it in fucking recording at least twice saying that to me, James. Oh, you're really funny with folk at cons. And I was like, am I? And I was like, shit, maybe I am.
It just comes across. I'll do the same. Yeah.
I think it's shyness. But I do remember that email because it was basically like, and I tried to email him back. I do remember that a couple of years. Oh yeah, it's out in Edinburgh now. Blah blah blah. I just asked him to write the foreword because it was like he genuinely, you know, folk would ask me about Transylvania Nights and he would always, oh, when's United? Can I really like the United stuff. And stuff
yeah,
like that.
Yeah.
And he just really got it as well. And I was,
he's an old school superhero fan as well. If you look at his Instagram and things like that, there's some great stuff goes up on there recently as well. Especially recently, I've noticed it. But yeah. Right, so let's move on to... So we've had a little bit of a chat about the art style there. Let's move on, before we get into the themes and some of the subjects I want to ask you about, let's talk a bit about what is called your writing style. Now, you're not a tight planner. I'm going to put it that way. So there's no index cards on a whiteboard, is there? It's not for you. It's like, I think I'll do a bit more. I think I'll keep going. Because I know, did it start out as 40 pages? Is that right? I'm saying that.
No, it was 7.
Yeah.
79 now. Aye.
Yeah, there you go. That's all right.
But I mean, it's tight. I mean, that's
yeah,
the thing.
Yeah.
It's because,
oh no, Reed's great, man. Yeah. It's just you're not going into it. You're not like, oh, you know, this has got to happen by page 2. This has got to happen by page 4. It's not like that with you, I suppose.
No. Well, I mean, so it's because back to the fight scenes is just like, maybe it's why it's so violent. It's just like thinking about, well, how would, right, you've obviously met me, I'm not like fucking, I don't know, Muhammad Ali or Mike Tyson or like that, you know what I mean? I'm a skinny guy, but I would think about it like, you know, if I had to fight someone, like, what, I know fucking how, you know, if I genuinely thought I was, my life was at risk, I know how fucking desperate I would be and how, you know, you're just going to go to any place to win a fight.
You can tell an artist who knows how to throw a punch, put it that way.
So that's the thing I like about Big Cat is like, for example, is there's always that kind of slight panic. Like, he's scared, and he openly says he's scared, and he will fucking do pretty... I mean, there's one of the early comics that hits someone over the head with a pillar box.
Right.
It's a letter box.
Right.
And he spawns it off their head. And someone else gets hit with... Boudica hits someone with a large vehicle in the face at one point as well. And it was just thinking about, right, okay, if you're going to hit someone with this, that really needs a double-page spread. And I'd only ever drawn one double-page spread before, so I thought, I want to get better at drawing double-page spreads. And then you start thinking about, right, okay, there's a knock-on effect then. I need to have that on the left page, because obviously it's a double-page spread, so I need to draw an extra page in here. And then it's like, right, so it's that kind of constant organic thing. I think the approach is, so the two influences I would say, and they weren't really conscious influences, it was just, I did it that way because it was kind of like the kind of like doing jazz or something like that.
I have
an A, B, C, D, E, you know, whatever particular things I want to happen, and there's an end in mind over what this is all about. And that the bigger picture has changed at times because this started off as a detective story.
Right, I know you got to be prepared. You got to be prepared to add stuff as you go along. I don't think it becomes too clinical. Then, you know, it's the problem with Marvel and DC is they got to fit it into whatever it is, 18 or 20 pages or whatever it is, and you're like, oh, really? You know,
the difference is you'll spend. So the writing style that I've equivocated mine to is Ross McDonald, the crime writer. He's Ed Brubaker's favorite writer. And what he would do is, he would write something, then he'd walk about for a bit, maybe like a year, just, and it would, you know, pop into his head and think about it, and dream something. It's the same with me. I'll think about it, and then it's just, it gets to the point, it's just like, I need to get this out of my head.
Yeah, I think...
And that's why I'm back to it. It's just, I fucking have to get rid of this. I need to...
I completely agree, man. I think, I had this discussion with Adam the other day, and I said, he said, hey, because we're doing a graphic novel, is our next plan. And he said, hey, getting on. And I said, as you well know, I like things to ruminate. You know,
and I
think you can tell the difference between someone who is, because what occurs to you straight, or if you sat down and wrote a superhero story, what occurs to you straight away as you write it is what will occur to the reader as they read it. Now, get away from that, you need to think about it on a number of multi levels. You can tell the small press who just thinks, I'm going to write a superhero, I'm going to write a detective, I'm going to write a horror, and it's just by rote. It's, you know, it's exactly what we expect, and it's written in that way because you need your imagination to grow a bit, don't you? And sit there and well, what about this? And oh, I'm going to change that, and you know, stuff like that. And I think that's what you've got to do. I think you need what Pat Mills calls the staring out the window time. I think is what he calls it.
When I read his book, I really struck a chord with him as well. The other one was, I think it's different if you're drawing it yourself, whereas if you're writing, like, you know that thing, you're like, this is a question for you more than me, because I've only ever written for Gav, Alfie Special Socks, two pages, and that's it.
One of our favourites, but
if you're writing for Adam, or you're writing for Cliff, whoever it was, see, even if it was me or something like that,
yeah,
there's particular things that you think were good at drawing.
And there's particular things that I can communicate in different ways to you. So, for example, Adam and I, we meet once a week and we talk, you know, a couple of times a week. And I'll often, we went on a long car journey the other day, and I'll say, this is how I see the opening. And I describe it, you know, like the start of the play, where it said, it's raining, all the umbrellas open. I do this sort of thing, and I like play it out as if I'm fucking performing it. So when I actually come to writing it, it'll be, it's the thing we talked about with the umbrellas. It's, don't forget it's raining. It's like that. But sometimes,
oh my god, just Stan Lee.
yeah, a little bit. No, I write it down. But the rather than phone it in. But the so if I've occasionally written for people I've never met before,
right.
And that is
that easier or harder?
It's very difficult. So I tend to write a lot more,
right.
And I tend to write like a Bible as well. So I tend to write like a little thing about this is this character, this is the world, and then I'll go into the script. You know.
Right.
Yeah.
Is this a bit, we're not taking it out of context, Tori Esmond claimed to have written the Bible?
That's the one. Yeah.
Right. So it's the opposite for me. So if I'm...
But not the Quran, obviously. Don't go there. Yeah, that's fine.
Yeah, no. So for me, it's the opposite.
Right.
I'll purposely draw things I can't draw so that I learn how to draw it. So it's like, it's quite funny because there's, so in this book, back to the first question you asked me, there's 120 pages that have been published previously before.
Right, yeah.
And then there's actually 79 pages which are of comics, which are new. And then it's probably going to be 232 pages long. So there's then like about another 30 pages of, like, there's five pinups. So the pinups just now are by Christy Russo.
Nice, good stuff.
His is fucking, they're all beautiful. I love Chris's stuff. Greg Schiegel.
So Russo's got a kind of like, there's a Peanutsy style to him, isn't there, a little bit?
Yeah, so it's kind of the pinup he's drawn. I mean, it's up in his Facebook page and Instagram page.
Oh, okay.
It's kind of not a million miles away from the style he drew in Hashtag Danger,
right,
which I absolutely love. I love that. It's actually in my list of recent comics I've read that I really, really enjoyed.
Okay.
And Greg Schiegel, his style as well is super clean. I mean, super, super clean. So seeing those, but even, I mean, they're both in the cartoony side, but Greg's probably more the kind of illustrative end. So he's more like a kind of Mike Waringo kind of style, whereas, Chris has definitely got that Charles Schulz influence. You can totally see it. And I love both their styles, and doing a pinup's a bit of a...
And I think that's a good choice because there's a big chasm between the way you're drawing and drawing, especially the United, and where you get a pin-up like that. And that's what I like. You don't want the pin-ups to be too close to your style sometimes. You want them to have that counterpoint to that
it's
little...
the point.
Yeah. Great
so,
stuff.
And then there's one by James Kirkcaldy, one by Ian Laurie.
Lovely.
And I think they're almost within that kind of same school of reference as well, like that little bit of I think there's quite a bit of Sean Phillips inks and James's stuff.
Okay.
And he's got a kind of Steve Ditko style quality as well.
Yeah.
Whereas Ian's got more that kind of maybe a bit of Jeff Lemire, but they've both got a kind of surreal, kind of nightmarish quality.
Yeah,
to them.
I never thought about him and Jeff Lemire, but you're completely right. Yeah.
Yeah, it's kind of scratchy of their line as well. I love their inking. Where it's, so you've got that kind of very super fucking clean, super polished, and then that slightly kind of.
So who's the fifth one by?
So the fifth one just totally came out of the blue. Jim Stewart, that writes and draws and created Ganja Man.
Oh yeah, man. Yeah.
I'm gonna do you a pinup, and I sent you today, and I couldn't stop laughing. he's so funny. And it's just he did one of the Mighty Scots. He just said, right, "I'm gonna do Joe." I'm going to do a picture of the Mighty Scots. I was like, all right. But it's so, I mean, so they're brilliant. And it's doing that kind of thing is a dream come true. I mean, I never thought, it's equivalent to seeing a wee kid walking into a con and, you know, they're wearing one of your characters in cosplay or something. It's just like, oh my, you actually feel legitimate. Do you know what I mean? It's the same as it had been collected in a book. I never thought my stuff would be in a book. It's like, I never thought I'd have an ISB. I'd be shelling out shit tons of money for ISB.
It's
a proper, I've got a barcode, I've made it.
Right, well let's move on to a couple of the themes then. You play about with the superhero stereotype. So I think if this was 20, 30 years ago, we'd be used to the clean cut, or maybe more, 40 years ago, we'd be used to the clean cut hero, you know, the infallible Superman, etc. But all your characters are fallible, aren't they? They fall somewhere between being fallible and being fuck ups, to be quite honest. In a way that we don't really look up to them. Now, is that something that just came naturally, or is that something you properly set about saying these people are, a lot of the time, twats? Is that what you tried to do, or? That's stunned you. You've gone quiet now.
No. I wouldn't go as far as to say that.
No, they're not all twats. No, they're not.
But I wouldn't go. No, I wouldn't go as far as say that there's. It's autobiographical, but there's something.
Right.
I would say there's aspects of my personality in all those characters, and it's probably the parts of my personality that I think are twatish. So, for example, the vanity of Big Cat.
Yeah, the vanity was something I was going to talk a bit about, because we've got the sin of vanity and the need for fame are the two. For some of them, it's the driving constituents of being a superhero, aren't they? You know.
But there's things in there as well. there's redemptive arcs for some of the characters, and then there's a kind of, I wouldn't say a fall, well, there is a fall from grace for some of the characters as well. So there are arcs through it. And going back to the writing bit, the way I kind of did that was that kind of, you know, that Seinfeld approach where I didn't do it in a whiteboard, but in my head, I had like kind of, I think Paul Levitz does something like this where he's got his A plots, his B plots, his C plots.
Oh, Claremont used to use this, didn't he, quite cleverly?
Yeah, except he just lost track of them. So that's kind of the way I would do it in my head, like, because there's each character of a beginning, a middle, and an end.
Right.
And then, again, that goes back to the, it got natural longer, because like, ah, there's not enough of this character in there. I want to draw an extra scene. So, for example, for Battalion 2, because there's two battalions, just to confuse it, because it's a legacy character.
Yeah.
It's a legacy brand, I suppose. There wasn't enough of Battalion in it. Or how I wanted the whole story to pay off. So I went back and drew an extra couple of pages in it. There's a scene with a helicopter in it. And I thought, wouldn't it be really cool if I didn't think my helicopter... When I'd drawn helicopters earlier on, I thought, oh, they're fine, but I really want to fucking really, really... I feel I've got really quite good at drawing helicopters. I want to draw another one. So I drew him hanging off a helicopter, and I just liked that image. And then there was, you know, I wanted to... in that scene reflect, and you know, something you were talking about earlier on about we're talking about independence, is just the Union Jack, and this is something that really frustrates me about Marvel in particular. The Union Jack increasingly means something very different to people from different socioeconomic backgrounds, different cultural backgrounds. Depending on where you live in Scotland, the Union Jack means completely different.
Oh, sorry, I thought you meant the character. Okay, right.
All right, no. Yeah, but the character as well, because that character's black as well. So for some people, you know, a black man wearing the Union Jack might be viewed differently than a white man wearing the Union Jack, or, you know, if he had a Scottish accent, he would be viewed differently than an English person wearing the Union Jack, or if he had an Irish accent, it would mean something completely different again. So that was one of the things that I think if you're doing a comic like that, and this is why I think there was an adverse reaction to the Union, the Marvel series, you know, about those, when you've got those stereotypical British characters, even though someone like Paul Grish writing, it's like...
Just a little bit on the nose. I'm going to say that, you know.
Can't do that anymore. I mean, as much as I love Captain Britain, it's kind of like James Bond. You know, when you're a kid, I love James Bond, you know, and then eventually look back and think, right, has he actually just raped that woman? Has he just slapped her? Has he just strangled her with a bra?
Well, this gets back to something we were going to talk about in a certain Captain America comic, is where he goes to a kid's house and he gives the kid a Stars and Stripes jacket as a thanks for being part of his little hacker brigade. And I'm thinking, if that kid wore that to school now, he'd get a kick in. You know.
Yeah, well, it would absolutely mean something completely different. And I think probably what's happening in America just now is probably what happened in parts of our country. Well, actually, it's been happening for over 100 years, let's be honest.
Yeah,
I mean, it's interesting. I mean, there's a bit... So even though it's a fragmented narrative, but between the kind of main story points, if I hadn't done it in a while, I would drop in kind of interludes. And those were always set in flashbacks.
Yeah, I was going to talk a bit about your time jumps, because you do use time jumps a lot, don't you? And also stylistically, you can tell, because for me, you've got time jumps that... the scenes wouldn't look out of place in a superhero version of the John Steed Avengers, but you've got the modern day the modern day bits remind me a little bit of something like, I don't know, the British Authority or something like that. There's visually they're different as well, you know.
Yeah, that's really quite weird, because so I started drawing there's some pages in the United I drew probably 20 years ago.
Wow, okay.
It was over that length of time, and just again, never finished stuff. And it was only when I was turning 40, my wife bought me tickets for Glasgow Comic Con, and she said, why don't you actually finish your comics? All of a sudden, the deadline of a few months, and drew a shit ton.
Right.
I think I've told you this before about originally collecting the big A4 comic, which was a horrible cover, so it's all binned. So there was that rush to kind of get that done, and It's quite interesting you're saying about how you can see how it's improved, but not so much that it's totally jarring.
No, it's not. You can tell it. I mean, there's moments in it. There's a moment with the lighthouse, which I'm like, fuck me, how did he work that out? You know, it's a bit like that.
All right, okay.
I don't want to spoil it, but do you know what I mean? There's that.
So That's one of the page. It's in fact it's in the back matter. That's a page I redrew because I just wasn't with it because I didn't like the way I'd done the clouds. And so when I went back and I was looking at the scene, I was like, I really like the way Hugo Pratt.
We talked about this at the time when you were drawing it, I think, didn't we?
So it's like, so that's what I mean. I suppose you could say, oh, he's ripped off Hugo Pratt and stuff. It's just like, well, I suppose it is that. I mean, all art's theft, doesn't it, really? But
We live in a world now where just photographs are transported into comics. This is not ripping it off, I've got to tell you. So,
The Correct Land Alien thing was bad. No, I was just looking at Hugo Pratt and I was like, I really like what he's done there with abstraction and stuff. I'm going to try that.
Right.
And it was, I really don't. There's another thing, if you go back and you look at that last couple of chapters, you'll notice something else stylistically. The page layouts change.
Okay.
As well. And there's that in it as well. And there's things like, I remember speaking to Alistair about this, and he was like, I'd dropped in clues all the way through this. Because after I'd drawn it, I would go back when I was doing the dialogue. Because what happens, so the way I've got this in my head, when I go to do the dialogue, when I pencil it, I'm doing what Jack Kirby used to do. I'm writing the dialogue in the gutters.
Right.
And then what I do is when I ink it, I used to rub it out, which would then fuck me, but I leave it in now. So if you get an original page from me, it's covered in the gutters and just writing.
Okay, right.
At the time. And then what I do is when I'm going back and like I do all my, adjust all my levels and stuff like that to get rid of a lot of the dirt and tidy up all the pages and convert it to grayscale and stuff, I take that out then, but that's all there. So when I'm doing my dialogue, I'm not making it, you know, up there and then. I'm polishing stuff I've already written. And similarly, when I'm drawing at the page, I'm not staring at a blank page and just, you know, doing a Joe Kubert, like drawing from one corner to the next. What I do is I've got a series of roughs,
right,
which I'll use my light table to trace onto the page, and I'll make adjustments and stuff as well. But I'll try not to lose too much of the energy. Like, I don't want it being too... Sometimes I do want a little bit of stiffness, which isn't always a bad thing. But, you know, I'll try and... I don't know, just really get into it. I think one thing that helps for me is I listen to certain types of music when I'm drawing a fight. You know, listen to really aggressive music.
Right, oh, God. Right, okay. But that's great, though. I mean, I talk a lot about on the ACP, I talk a lot about emotion in art, and I think that you really have to have that to communicate a story. I think I much prefer something that has, you know, an emotional flow to it than something that looks like a technical drawing, you know. There's a couple of experiments, because I like the fact that you've experimented in this. I like the fact that you do change up page layouts and styles and stuff. So a couple of that sprang to mind is one you use. It reminded me, funny enough, of a P. Craig Russell, Don McGregor page from Killraven, where you've got on the left three quarters of the page, you've got the panels, but on the right three quarters, you've got the panels, and on the left, you've got like text. So it's almost like an illustrated prose page. It's like an illuminated Bible, or, you know, it's like that sort of thing, isn't it?
Ed Brubaker did that a couple of times in his comics. Yeah. I don't think I got it from that. I'm trying to remember where I got it from. It was,
I think, Morrison did it in a couple of Batmans as well.
I didn't really read a lot of his run. I'm trying to remember where I got that from. I must have seen it somewhere and quite liked it. So there's a lot of things, like the thing that Gav always picked up on is the circular, and Dan does as well, the circular panels.
Yeah, that's another thing I was going to ask, actually.
Staple of Frank Bellamy when he did stuff for Lookin and TV. What was it called?
I
can't remember that TV.
TV 21.
Yeah. So that kind of look as well. And again, it's what always surprised me was when people would look at this and say, "Oh yeah, your stuff looks like this or looks like that." And I always assumed it was straight up American influences. And I think Alan Davis, to a certain extent,
right,
you could almost call him an American comic artist, because you can see his influences most obviously are maybe someone like a John Buscema or a Jim Aparo. But then when you actually read the Modern Masters book in Alan Davis, and Alan Davis, when I started doing this, was easily my biggest artistic influence, to the point where if you see, in fact, I'm looking at Boudicca's bum just now, not consciously, it's on that page. It's an Alan Davis bum. I can totally see that, because that's, I reverse engineered that. It's quite funny.
He does do a famous bum, a Captain Britain bum, doesn't he?
Yes.
Because of Captain Britain had that sort of white costume. So you just got the outline of this sort of Cheesecake Man bum, didn't you, for a while? Yeah, I know exactly what you mean.
It's,
yeah.
it's my women's bum. So Big Cat's bum is an Alan Davis bum.
Right.
And then it's the hips. I always struggled with when a woman's rib cage goes down into her hips. I always struggled with those. I could never get it right.
Right.
And again, it's because I'd be, if I look at myself for reference, I've got more ribs than a woman. That's why it doesn't. It can never look right if you're basing it yourself. Whereas there's some physicality. So for example, the character the fox that's in this, he is based on me. He has my physique. That is my face.
Okay.
Because I basically ran out of. So a lot of the characters in this are based on people I know. So you're in this.
Am I?
Yeah. Dan Butcher's in this. You're in one of the fight scenes. You're either getting your throat slit.
Oh, good.
You're behind someone as well, because obviously your face is never really.
And my dog's in it.
The dog's in it.
Yeah, that's brilliant. I'm very excited about that.
I think I drew him too big.
No, that's fine. No, he's quite big. He's bigger now. Yeah, that's fine. That's perfect size. I want to talk a little bit about more about the experimentation. So I was going to cover the circular panels, but the page make that is my favourite page. Is the one, it looks like something straight out of a movie, like a 60s, early 70s movie, like The Final Program or something like that, or it looks like the last episode of The Prisoner, but it's the checkerboard effect. It's a trippy, it's almost like a fucking space opera design in a superhero comic. Does that make sense, the way I say that?
Yeah. I know, I'm looking at the page just now. So that's actually a throwback to some earlier design stuff in it, and there's a bit of David Lynch stuff in there as well.
Yeah, that's true. I should have gone there. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. But if you actually look at the fight scene at the back, that tattoo appears on one of the characters, and that character is based on Ian Laurie, who's a huge fan of David Lynch and Twin Peaks.
Right.
So that's why I did that design, and because when I was thinking about. So basically it's a visual representation of someone's power, and that character has been built up. There's a nightmarish quality to that character because you see that character in flashbacks, and there's something, I was trying to build up suspense about this character, and it's always like, but what does she actually do? And it was the same with Malcolm McCabra and Lucas Grange, two of their characters in it.
Yeah.
With Lucas Grange, I always like the idea of no one actually knows what his power is, because the only people that have ever seen his power are dead.
Right.
So that was the logic I had. Like, no one knows what he does, because anyone that ever actually sees him uses his power. And originally it was going to be basically just a fucking death ray. Death ray comes out of his eyes and that's it. They're dead. No, they're just dead.
Right.
Because I always thought the cop out with Darkseid that, you know, when he fires his fucking, is it his Amiga beam or whatever it's called, you know, people, they get sent back. What if you actually have someone like who just fucking kills people? And that's why Poison Dart Frog.
Right.
You can't touch him. If you touch his costume, you're just dead. And that's the beauty of doing. Yeah. You know, a comic that, you know, people just are dead, that's it.
But there is that side to it. There's a disturbing, nightmarish side to it. And the one that really gets me is, I don't know if you remember this, but last year they did a horror movie with the banana splits, and I'm like, that's fucking just pissing on my grave, my friend. But the...
Really?
Yeah.
What was that called?
I think it's called The Banana Splits or something.
Really? I loved that show when I was a kid. Yeah. So I put quite a lot of kids' TV shows in this as well.
That's where I'm going with this, is you make Zippy a total bastard in this.
Yeah, the Rainbow Gang,
Zippy from Rainbow. When you think about it, he has got a fucking frightening face with a zip for a mouth.
It's terrifying.
Yeah.
It's absolutely terrifying. So, and also, the talking chimpanzee, it's kind of, so the way he's introduced Bingo, and that character's based in one of my best friends. He was one of the best men at my wedding, because I had two, there's another
two best
character.
Men, not two weddings, I'd like to point out.
Yeah, not two weddings, you know. two best men at my wedding, just because I've known them both I've known Ian since I was four and Craig since I was five. And I'd always said to them, I just couldn't choose between you. You're brothers to me, do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Except I actually like you both and I can't stand my brother. So, so there's that. There's those kind of things in there as well, because I always thought, I was thinking about this with my wife earlier on, like, when we're talking about the crumbleweeds in the car, she's younger than me, she couldn't remember it. I was like, "Surely weird." She says, "What was it?" I was like, "It was on at 5:30 on a Saturday, and you'd Metal Mickey on before it."
Right. Okay.
And then you had this program about it was just men singing. And I can't remember anything else about the crumbleweeds except.
No, I don't really remember it.
And even the goodies, which I have fond memories of.
Frighten me as a kid. The goodies.
It's disturbing. That's what I was going to say. It's really, really. There's something. Even things like. like Fawlty Towers, which again people see as classic, there's a real hysteria there. Yeah. It's fucked up. I mean, obviously it's incredibly racist in hindsight as well, and also, you know, it's just horrific, some of the stuff in it. But that's one of the things I wanted in this as well, was, and I think that's where, like, thinking back to things like Jasper's Warp and stuff like that and Captain Britain, I think that's where that comes from. It's British tea.
It's the same, man.
It's really, it's not quite right. There's something.
If it wasn't sparking something in you, then it was bland and boring. And that's the reason 2000 AD succeeded. That's the reason a lot of Marvel UK succeeded. That's the reason that Warrior magazine succeeded. It's because it had something that was dangerous. And that's the mistake that people do making kids comics and making, you know, teenagers comics these days, is they don't make it dangerous. The kids aren't going to come back to it because it's just a bland old story about a flower walking over a hill. You know, nobody wants to read that. Nobody wants to read it. Yeah.
Yeah.
Let's move on, because I know, look at this. We said let's do half an hour. We're at 50 minutes now. I've got a couple of other questions for you, mate, before we get on to a couple of things. You use British folklore quite heavily in this, I've noticed. So there's ley lines, is an early mythological narrative structure thing, or the thing that you use. You use stone circles, you mention them, and you also mention Freemasons. So is that, did you feel that you had to have that reach back to make it a bit more British, or why was that?
So the ley lines thing just came from, you know, it's almost like the Stan Lee and the mutants, you know, he just couldn't think of anything else, kind of thing. So they're just born with their powers, you know, rather than the purpose of choosing this stuff for racism. And it was just like, you know, when I was drawing it, it's just thinking about British things. It wasn't just, you know, about British superheroes and stuff like that. And obviously that was there in Captain Britain as well. And this is, you know, I mean, there's a few things in there in terms of comics I've read that this, you know, pays homage to Zenith.
Captain,
shamelessly, even, you know, like, you're right, like, it's the neck in Mighty Scotsman.
It's true.
Where he's in his costume. That is an Alan Davis neck, and the shoulders as well. Yeah. And if you see it from a kind of three quarters angle from behind, from above, that bird's eye shot, I learned to draw that again, reverse engineering Alan Davis. But again, you know so much about comics, you'll go through it and you'll see, oh, that panel when he's running in silhouette, he's using extreme force shortening. That's a Jim Aparo run.
I get you. Yeah,
that's
Alan Davis
as well.
But the thing is about Alan Davis knew how to draw a hero. You got the almost cartoony hero. But there was, like, again, there was something slightly different about the way he did it. There was something, it gave it, there was a slight weirdness. You know, when you get to the Saturn, like, stuff, and the, you know, the Captain Britain Corps, and you get all that sort of thing. It's just slightly off, isn't it? It wasn't American comics for me at the time.
Yeah. So, I mean, that's the ley line's that, but also I was remembering one of the things I've thought about quite a lot in this was fucking, so there's bits of the old Richard Sullivan, Dick Turpin TV show.
Oh,
so the Highwayman came from that.
Yeah, which is a comic as well. I think that's, you can get that as a looking.
I would almost say I had a crush on him, actually.
He was in everything, wasn't he? He was this sort of slightly normal bloke who seemed to be in everything. Yeah.
But he was almost like a sex symbol as well, with that wonky face.
He's still about. You see him occasionally on Twitter. He
must be about 80.
Oh, yeah, talking about fucking Robin's Nest or something. You know, he does all that, doesn't he?
Yeah. Robin's Nest. And me and my girl. Yeah. It was me and my girl. Yeah, but no, so cat like that as well. And I think what was really interesting about guys like that, and Heidi High as well, when I was thinking about some stuff.
How is everyone in Heidi High not a nonce? I don't understand it. You know, it's like one of those, isn't it? Yeah.
It's a guy that, I remember I used to have early sexual stirrings about, what was her name, Ruth something?
Ruth Maddock, my friend.
Yeah,
with a little xylophone.
Just, accent.
Yeah.
Oh, I was, bloody hell. that accent. So, so some of the characters are actually based in, so Eddie Speed's Welsh, and he's meant, I mean, you can tell because he wears goggles and stuff like that, but he is meant to be, his parents are Chinese, and he's Chinese Welsh.
Okay.
Mighty Scotsman's Scottish, but again, you find out he's not a typical Scotsman, he doesn't drink, he's a vegan. You know, Big Cat is based in David Beckham, you know, he's kind of, I suppose there's elements of being a kind of London wide boy in there as well.
Funny enough, Battalions. David Beckham appears on the first page of Bingo Bonanza. There you go. The comic that I promised never to release again.
Yeah, really?
Yeah.
So and Battalion's black, and he's gay as well, kind of thing.
Yeah.
You know, so I mean, it wasn't purposely I want to do something with diverse characters. I just want to do something like whenever you. I mean, Excalibur, which I love, and again, this is a strong love letter to Excalibur as well. Hopefully, you know, people don't say I'm certainly never trying to rip it off. It's just I love that. It's one of my favourite comic runs ever. But also, you look at the makeup of the characters. There was Captain Britain, who again comes from a very upper class background, university educated, very English, and very conservative English. Megan, who originally is from that gypsy traveller background, but that almost seems completely it's not forgotten about, but it's never really it's tokenistically there, I think,
okay.
Because she becomes
you
know, sort of very, again, very stereotypical character, and I think her character was more interested when she, you know, she had the bat wing ears.
They tried to pull off a Cyclops Wolverine Jean Grey with her and Captain Britain and
Nightcrawler.
Yeah, Nightcrawler.
That's just it. You had more American characters in it than you had actual British characters in it. And I was just like, I wanted this to feel British, and I wanted it to be, it's like the Pat Mills thing. I didn't want particularly upper class characters in it. All the characters are meant to have a working class feel in this, where the original Battalion is a squaddie.
Yeah.
You know, Big Cat is, you know, he comes from a Brixton estate, and he's, you know, but he's become famous and he can't really handle it. Mighty Scotsman, you know, the first time you see him, it's in these flats are pulled down now, but it's still Bluevale flats in the Gallagate in Glasgow. You know, so there are people who have, you know, come into money from either being a combination of good looks and superpowers and infamy.
Right.
Definitely that kind of working class side to it. And that was something very, very purposely thinking about what Pat Mills had said. You know, and also when I was growing up as well, I think that's, I never really read a lot of 2000 AD, but the characters I really liked, like Spider-Man was my favourite character, was because he was pretty much Marvel's only working class superhero.
Yeah.
Daredevil's a billionaire lawyer, Tony Stark's a billionaire, he seems to get richer by the second, and it's like, it's boring. So, I mean, it's just,
yeah,
it doesn't reflect, you know, this shouldn't reflect real world, you know, no one wants to pick up a comic about superheroes and it's like, you know, reflecting the real world because you're reading it for the superheroics. It's there's a fantasy element to it.
Yeah.
But just
good stuff, man. If I can ask you, we're going to pause for the advert if you don't mind, then we're going to just return and we're going to talk about packaging, how you're going to go ahead marketing it, and what sort of format you're going to put it in, stuff like that, and what your plans are for Kickstarter. So if you just bear with me.
Right.
So the advert this week, we've got a new sponsor. This sponsor is, it comes from this week, the sponsor comes from an all-ages picture book. Put Tony's Nuts in Your Mouth by Bimisi Tayanita and Sumagayan Bangladesh. Read along and learn all about nuts of all sizes, shapes and colours. You can put Tony's Nuts in your mouth. Available through Amazon.com. There you go. You can actually look that up on Amazon.com. It's a real book. This is a real sponsor. Put Tony's Nuts in Your Mouth is available on Kindle. There you go. Did you see the advert for that this week online? I couldn't not do that one, could I? Let's face it. Right, moving on to the amazing area that gets dismissed too much in the small press area of marketing. So,
sorry, I'm still laughing. Oh, fucking hell, I've got a
stupid. Right, come on.
Oh, Christ. Sorry.
I'm not cutting any. We're going to keep going. Keep rolling. Right.
I'm so professional.
Right. So the plan is, Mr. P, come on. The plan is to do a Kickstarter, isn't it? So we're going to go for a Kickstarter at the end of sometime in October. I was interested. You said earlier you're going to put it on. Stop it. You're going to do it on Halloween. Why Halloween? Why Halloween, babes?
I'm actually fucking crying. No, Halloween was just like, I mean, it was always kind of aiming to, you know, I was really aiming to get it done. I mean, originally I was planning to get this done much earlier in the year, and then just kept getting longer and longer and stuff.
Right.
And just for, when it kind of got to this time, and given building the room for Gav, like, I'd spoken to Gav, he said, oh, give me about a month to, because he's doing the design work in the book and stuff like that, and we're bouncing ideas off each other.
I was going to ask you about Adam that. Felt, so have you got, so Adam's coloured the cover, isn't he? So
he did. I mean, I don't know if you think I'm just ass kissing him, but it's fucking stunning.
He's great with colours, man. Me and him have been talking colours all this week. Yeah.
Oh, he's the guy's a genius, and I was a wee bit like Gav. The good thing about Gav doing the book design and stuff is, I mean, you were there when he was looking through some of the pages in Starbucks.
Yes. Yeah, we met. Yeah, yeah. He brought his saucepan along, didn't he? That's right. Yeah.
Yeah. But he's actually a beautiful
nice guy, really nice guy. Yeah.
He's a lovely guy, but he's also incredibly honest. He will just straight out say, the storytelling doesn't work here. Why have you drawn it like this? Oh, that's not great. And that's exactly, he's basically like my comics wife. Like, he's so honest.
Yeah.
Scathing. He's just honest. It's constructive criticism, and he is lovely, but there's no beating about the bush, and that's what you need. So there's been a couple of pages, like, I've redrawn here and there, even when it's in the book form, and also like stuff like I hadn't even converted the grayscale and stuff. I've gone back and converted the old stuff to grayscale just so it pops better.
Yeah.
Excuse me, adjusted levels rather than brightness, contrast, that kind of thing. The design thing, so what I wanted it to have the feel of, I'd been sending him pictures of old Warrior magazines and Daredevil saying, because he was like, this interview is really long. Why have you got so much text in the back? I was like, because it should feel like an annual.
Okay. Yeah.
Like, so it's in a hardback format.
Oh, it's hardback. I was going to ask about that. Yeah, you're going.
It's hardback. Yes, it feels like an old British annual.
Oh, nice.
Color cover, all black and white inside. The design stuff in terms of fonts, he's done for the backup features, which are written by. Well, there's a big interview with me, like a round robin interview with me, Chris Giarrusso, and Greg, and it's all about how we. Approach a process. So the way that I figured was, rather than ask them, you know, how do you get started in comics and stuff like that, which they've done before in Greg's podcast, stuff said, like,
yeah.
That's out there already. It's very much from a comic artist point of view, is what's the most surprising thing anyone's ever said to you about your art?
Okay.
And so it was doing it that way. So it's very much process driven, very much focused in that. And it is quite long, it's about 8 pages, but again, that was based on, the idea I had for that was I wanted to do something like that book, Sparring McGill Kane, that I keep on banging on to you about. This panel, because you're just really getting in about it. It's kind of, because a lot of the times I end up in conversations with at cons, it's usually younger folk coming up to me, like teenagers or folk in their 20s, and just ask me about making their own comics, and they'll run ideas by me. It is frustrating that they don't actually fucking buy anything, but at the same time, it's so cool. When you list, you know, this person's, you know, just saying, I've got ideas for thousands of cats, and then just start telling you them.
Yeah.
And it's like, I'm like, can you hold on a second? I'm writing this down. Can I remember to rip you off? No, I mean, it's always that thing. Is look, you need. It's the same thing my wife said to me. Look, you actually need to finish something.
Yeah.
So anyway, so it's in hardback. It's 232 pages long. There's 5 pinups in it, which is sort of already. There is a there's a special feature in it, by a super fan, George McDonald.
Oh, yeah, I've heard of George. He's a bit of a young buck, isn't he? He's in, I think he's done a couple of other things I've read, yeah. Good old George McDonald.
He's I would say he's a strong personality. He's very strong opinions.
He's what, sorry?
He's very strong opinions.
Oh, is he? Oh, I don't like people like that. Yeah.
He does. Yeah, no, he's
maybe I'll try and get him on the show, see what he's like. Yeah.
I like to think that.
Quite angry.
I'm right? Not feeling him. He's feeding at my creative teat, and I think he's with strong nuzzling.
Yeah.
I feel that.
Yeah.
You know, I like to think I'm bringing him to flower.
Yeah, you'd let him in your in and out driveway on your lock side apartment, wouldn't you? You know.
I mean, I never want to meet him.
No, I don't blame you.
Scared of him. He's a strangely intense individual, but he is a talented writer.
Okay. Anything else? You got the intro from Alistair. You got the load of pin-ups. You got this great interview. You got the graphic novel length comic. So what else? What else are you planning on doing from a sort of marketing point of view. So we're going to go Kickstarter. I would highly recommend you do that whole pre-email Kickstarter thing, which seems to be the coolness at the moment, where you say, sign up for this, and we'll let you know. Are you going to, I'm guessing you're going to put some pages up as one of the pledge levels?
So the pledge levels currently just now are that the book is the hardback book, 232 pages, 199 pages of comics is £20.
Good stuff. Good.
So I figured I'd looked about different prices and stuff, and there's quite a few small press comics and they're really expensive.
£10
for I don't even know. I've seen 20 page comics.
Me and Vince and Dan were talking today about a 34 page comic that was £7.20 on Comixology. Never mind a physical copy of it.
I was when I originally did the United original issues are £2 each. I was gutted I couldn't do it for 10p.
Yeah.
I mean, I just want, because I wanted to replicate what I had as a kid. I was obviously that was fucking 40 years ago. So obviously that's why I didn't. But yeah, £20 was basically just. You know, it's covered. It's not just covering print costs. It's covering the cost of paper, pens, inks, buying a fucking scanner, pin-ups.
That's good value, man. That is very good value.
To me it is. I was like, fucking hell. I mean, particularly when I started printing it off and I had to actually go and buy another ink cartridge. Right, okay, there is a lot in this book. Like, the weight of it is just...
That's the problems of working from home. There you go, right there. Yeah.
Definitely. So hardback, and really wanted that deluxe feel, and also, like, the old British annual and stuff like that, and also, like, you know, the kind of backups and stuff like that, and it's very much that kind of Warner magazine feel. So the other tiers in the Kickstarter are digital copy, which I think is £8.
Right.
Print copy, which is £20. And then for, I think it's £25, there's three prints.
That's good value as well, man. 25. I'd go 30 with that. If you've got three prints for them,
Maybe actually. Well, one's the cover.
Right.
So coloured by Adam. One's the Mighty Scotsman, which is the rough you've seen. That's that cover.
Yeah, okay.
T-shirt. And then I forgot I'd actually done it. I actually paid Gav to come as well, and I completely forgot about it. And I'm really bad for that. And then the other one is of the inside cover, which was the original cover, which was going to be a double page spread. And I was just like, I actually want to go for more something with a more design feel, like kind of I did in Transylvanian Nights.
Right, okay.
I was thinking about t-shirts and stuff. And then the next level up from that is physical copy plus original page of art, which I think is maybe...
Let's decide, because I know you're gonna lowball it, and I don't want you saying it on the air, because I'm going to try and talk you into putting it up. But so we'll be including art. Any other? You're not doing fucking badges and all that shit, are you? Or
no, I thought, but I mean, I'd like to do t-shirts, but just unless I can work out a kind of print to order thing and then have it. There is one site I know of that does that.
Right.
Greg, my mate Greg, he does that with his t-shirts.
Right.
If I can do it that way, because otherwise ship. I was just thinking about shipping basically everything like A4 prints rather than A3, because then it's a pain in the ass for shipping.
Yeah, completely.
You're sending two parcels, the shipping costs are ridiculous, particularly to America.
Yeah.
The shipping is insane just now.
Tell me about it. Yeah, I know what you mean. Yeah, I sent some stuff this morning. But yeah, I know what you mean. Oh, good stuff, man. So, right, so we've gone much longer. We said half an hour. It's now, almost 70 minutes.
Half past 12.
Where can we find your stuff? So let's have all your socials and your website, or if you've got one. And what else you got on sale? What else you got coming up?
So you can find me on CannonHill_comics on Instagram. And I'm down as CannonHillComic on Twitter. And I'm on Facebook as Johnny Cannon. And there's also a Cannon Hill Comics page as well.
Nice.
And my online shop is www.cannonhillcomics.bigcartel.com. Brilliant. There's stuff on there as well. I will do the mailer Kickstarter. I've done the draft of it. I was just waiting for
Good work, man.
Cover been finished off before I kind of had the kind of pre fucking preview.
I think there's some people in this world I would recommend that they finish their project before they put the Kickstarter up.
I know,
but, you're not one of them, my friend, because I've seen it and you've got it. It's pretty much done. You know.
Yeah.
I think you could put it up today and be happy that you would have it out in 2 months' time. You know, it's like that, isn't it?
It's just so the only thing I'm waiting on is basically the cover template from the printers. That's
right.
It.
Okay. Yeah.
That's literally it. Give it a final read through. I want to get a print a preview copy first so I can see I don't need this.
Yeah.
I want a thicker card and stuff like that, you know. I want not too sure about this paper and stuff because I want it to have a very specific feel.
Yeah.
Like, you know, uncoated paper, certain weight. I don't want it too heavy that fucking kills anyone or traps anyone. But I want it to Gav has done a ridiculously good job in the design of this. It's going to be a beautiful looking book, but it's going to have that feel I want of that, you know, kind of Warrior magazine, Daredevils.
Yeah, mate, it's up my street.
Guys like you look at this and say, right, okay, I see exactly what he's going for.
I talked through Warrior with Eamon the other day, and it was like the best walk down memory lane. Yeah, I love it, man.
It's so good. Yeah. The Gary Leach stuff, and I agree with you, is Gary Leach. My God.
Fucking hell. Why didn't he do more? You know what I mean?
No, yeah. Why didn't he do more?
I don't know. He's still about. You still meet him. He used to go to Orbital Comics quite a lot.
Right. This stuff's incredible. Because I remember seeing this, reading Marvel Man when I was younger, and I was like, yeah, I prefer Alan Davis. And then I look back, and it's early Alan Davis.
Yeah.
Which is what you reminded me of. So when I was pulling all this together, at one point I thought, I'm going to go back and start redrawing stuff, the older stuff that I don't like. And I thought, what I remembered was...
On the grounds that you are mental. I like to add that, Yeah,
there is that. I do it quite a lot. That's what Greg was saying as well. Can you be drawing stuff? What? So, the Panini volume of Captain Britain, when it gets to the early Captain Britains, and this is famously when Alan Davis took it on.
Right.
He was doing it with Dave Thorpe, and Paul Neary was the editor, I think.
Okay, sounds about right.
And Alan Davis was drawing it actual size because he thought that's how comics were produced.
Right.
And if you look at the art and the early issues of Captain Britain that appeared in Marvel Superheroes, it is... You know I'm Alan Davis's biggest fan.
Yeah.
It is really rough.
Yeah.
And then you can see him in that rapid improvement because he's doing it professionally and he's getting guidance from good editors.
It's like the stuff on Harry, Harry and the Hard Rock. It's like
Harry
that.
20 and High Rock. He's a bit more posh than that.
Yeah,
but he's not quite there. You're right. You can see he's improving his stuff, but he's almost got an elongated arms.
Right.
Isn't it?
Okay.
Like his name Big Red. He's got. The physicality is not quite right, but everything that's Alan Davis is in there, it's just not polished yet, it's not smoothed over. And I think it's only really when he gets to DC Comics, when he's doing maybe Batman and Outsiders, maybe Detective Comics, it's just like this guy's there.
Man, he's the first comic that ever made me properly laugh was D.R. and Quinch, and part of that's him.
Oh.
You know, that's why.
Nine Dorns, Marlin. Oh,
sorry,
Jesus
mate.
Christ. Nine Dorns is Marlin. I cried with laughter.
His isn't Prussian blue. You know, I used to say that all the time. Yeah.
It's genius.
Why people don't go, this is the book. It's like amazing. You know, it should be better thought of. But and it shows how fucking funny Moore is as well. That's the thing. Anyway, walk down memory lane. So, good. So, let's not say Halloween. We're going to say sometime in October, are we? It's going to launch. Might be sooner rather than later. But definitely, if you're listening to this, go and follow Mr. C on Twitter or Instagram. What's your favourite? It's going to be Instagram, isn't it, these days? Is that where the coolness lies?
Instagram is, because Twitter, I'm quite judicious over content. I see, I'll just, any shite, like any lunacy, I just fucking block. I've no interest in it.
Yeah.
I'm there for comics, and that's what I'm interested in.
Yeah, me too.
And also how Scottish footballers are doing it
for
overseas clubs as well, so... Strangely fascinated in the career of Ryan Gold.
I treat it like an OnlyFans account sometimes. You know, that's how it is. Good-o. So find you on Instagram, and I'm looking forward to it, man. It's good. And I got to look through it. I'm going to read it properly over the weekend, but I got to look forward. I got to look through it today. It's good stuff, man. Brilliant. And it's been a bit of a... I've watched you grow on this one. It's been good stuff, because I think having known you now for a few years personally, I've watched you draw it and talk about it, and yeah, can't wait. I can't wait for it to be out. And I think it's going to be one of those books. I think it's going to be, especially the way you've done it. You've done it. It's like a bande dessinée. It's a collection. It's a good long graphic novel. I think it's going to be a hit, man. I genuinely do. And I think people need to get behind it. But good. Thank you, dude. For my stuff, you can go to tributepress.bigcartel.com. with Tiger Style, Knockout and Tiger Style is back from the printers, we think, tomorrow morning, so I'm going to get a look at that. Jeremy is printed and ready to go out, and we've done a little martial arts guide, like an A4 martial arts guide, with Count Ez, who has buns of steel, so watch out for that, it's coming out too. I sent you that, didn't I? I sent you and Jim that, Mr. McCulloch, yeah. Good. Thank you, man. And it's been, as always, a pleasure. And I think we're talking again mid-October, but I'll say goodbye now, and we'll keep chatting after this music. See you later, man. Take care.